Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the At Your Instep podcast. I am joined, by, as usual, with Jordan and Mike. And we actually have a couple special guests this time around. We're on the road. We are on the road to GP Detroit.
GP Detroit!
Yeah!
Yeah!
And we actually have a couple of guests in the car that normally aren't on the podcast.
You should hear them right there.
to my left, I have one of our friends and local players, Elliot. Elliot, say hi.
Hey, guys.
And then to my right, I have JP. JP is actually one of our local judges. He's a level one judge. JP, okay, go ahead and say hi.
Hey, guys.
So we just kind of wanted to do an all-together kind of podcast since we were all going to be stuck in a car for 3 hours, and we thought, why not? So we kind of just wanted to do a quicker podcast just because we felt that, you know, trying to get something out beforehand, and then also we're going to have another episode after we get done with the GP, per se. But we kind of wanted to do a last minute run through of the things that we expect to see at the GP. And then, some other questions. You know, we do have a judge here in the room, so it's kind of nice to be able to ask some random judge questions. So,
we've been rude to our guests thus far.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We haven't asked them the question.
So Jordan always keeps us on line with this. So,
and the scholar of the group, right?
So we do have a traditional question. And you know what? I'm going to let Jordan take care of this, because he usually does a very good job of it.
Elliot,
so.
We're going to start with Elliot.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
I want to know, between these three professional Magic players, which one would you fuck, which one would you marry, and which one would you kill?
That was pretty good.
LSV, and the Dragon Master himself, Brian Kimball.
Well, the Dragon Master is pretty good looking. I'd probably have to fuck him. LSV just seems like a cuddly guy, and he'd be really nice. So I guess I'd marry him, and I guess that just leaves Tom Martell to kill.
Thank you. So far, everyone has agreed with you, except for Mike. Mike seems to think...
I'm so sorry, Tom Martell.
I don't mean to kill him.
We could be together in our dreams.
Tom Martell's an unfortunate soul to go, but...
He's like a lingering soul, right?
He is the lingering...
I can't keep making that joke.
You can't.
So, yeah, every episode we make that joke, right?
It's rotating out. You can't keep making it.
One more time!
All right, so JP, I asked you the same question. Do you, Tom Martell, LSV, Brian Kibler, whom do you fornicate with? Whom do you wed for life? And whom do you murder?
Horrifically, I hope.
Horrifically.
Yeah, I mean...
I think we've talked about this before, actually.
Yeah, we have had this discussion before, actually. Definitely having sex with Kibler. Definitely having sex with Kibler. It's a real toss-up, and I know we talked about this just because the LSV Tom Martell thing is really a close toss-up. I think at the end of the day, you do end up marrying LSV, because stable, pillar of the Magic community, really genuinely awesome dude, great sense of humor, great personality. I mean, it doesn't get better than that, so I'm sorry, Tom Martell, but you're going to have to die.
And the restraining orders that this podcast has for Tom Martell, the list continues to grow.
And this will be the last major event at Transcend Potential, right, because we won't be allowed back.
We won't be allowed back.
DCI banned.
I'm sorry, LSV is in the room. You guys are not allowed in the room.
Sorry. Tom Martell really fears for his life.
Poor Tom.
And Kibler isn't like that.
Yeah.
Kibler is a nice man. He's classy.
And the fact that you won't marry him really hurts his feelings.
Oh, I would marry him. I mean, that's not even a question. You just asked who I wanted to fuck. That's different.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, come on, let's face it. Kibler's a trophy wife.
Right? Yeah, right?
Right. Take him to parties, but you gotta go hang out with him.
All right. Well, we got that over with, and thank you guys for participating. That is, we even asked Ruben that when he was on the show, so everyone gets that. God forbid we get someone that actually is relatively important within the Magic community.
Like Tom Martell.
Would we change it at that point in time? I don't even know.
See, I guarantee if we ask Kimball this question, he'd marry himself. So yeah.
There you go. He's like, can I choose myself for all three? All two?
Oh, Tom Martell's answer would be, I'd have sex with Kibler, I'd marry Elsie, and kill myself.
Good lord. Oh, man. So.
Fuck our magic.
Yeah, let's do so. So we're obviously on our way to GP Detroit, and it's modern, so we are kind of... excited, obviously.
Kind of
excited. It's modern. It's not standard. We don't want to play standard anymore. Standard's kind of boring. But something that we didn't talk about on our last podcast that came out before GP Detroit was the expected field. I don't think we really necessarily talked about that very in depth. So we'll go ahead and we'll start with Mike. Mike, what do you think some of the expected decks are going to be there at GP Detroit?
There's the three sort of obvious ones. There's going to be blue-white-red control and its variants. Elliot here said that's what he's... we'll talk about what he's got kind of on, and he likes that control sort of list. There's a couple different ones, but essentially you're going to see colonnades, you're going to see snapcasters, all those fun things. You're also going to see a lot of Jund, and I will say again, Jund variants. If you look at the Players' Championship, the World Championship, you had Jund, but you also had black-green. It's almost exactly like John, just like no lightning bolts and no mana killing yourself. And then, of course, you'll have Tron, which if we look over here at Jordan, he's like, hey, what's Cedric Phillips going to play? Oh, I'll do whatever he says!
It was really cheap, man.
Of course it's cheap when you borrow it.
Yeah.
Al wins. That's $3. Yeah.
But I think that deck specifically, Cedric Phillips is kind of an interesting streamer because he's one that has done all his preparation for major events publicly. So, you would know his sideboard plan, you would know how to play the deck, you would know its matchups well. So, really, if you wanted to get into modern, Jordan over here, it's not a terrible place to start. And the deck is obtainable. With the exception of Karns and, the Singleton Emrakul, it's really not that bad. So, those are probably the top three. In modern, you have a million decks. You'll have some form of pod. Kiki Pod would probably be better than Malaria Pod, but people, it's kind of like Legacy. People will play whatever deck they want to play.
Right, that's kind of the nice thing. It's a very wide format. Now, Jordan, do you expect to see anything else than that might pop up that maybe wasn't brought up?
No, not really. I do think Blue Light Red is the deck to beat this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I think it allows for the most skill in the matchup. Elliot, for example, is a really technical player. Very methodical in his play. We'll have a better advantage with Blue Eye Red than I will with Tron, just because it allows for more play. He has more room to let his skill show.
Yeah.
Tron's pretty. Oh, do I have Tron? Well, Mole, if not, Tron's going to be big because Cedric Phillips streams. Michael Jacobs plays a form of Pod. He's a pretty popular streamer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people want to emulate Michael Jacobs all the time, so I don't know how people feel about him. But I like him, but I know he's a controversial figure, so I don't know if people do that or not. But Tron's going to be huge. It is AHE, but it's borrowable as well, as Mike said. I don't own 80% of my cards, which is the best thing about having friends.
So if you see Jordan at the GP today, don't steal his deck.
Yeah.
You're going to leave this really awkward on the car, I know.
Also, if you're listening to this right now, who the fuck are you? Get the hell off my phone.
I do want to point out, if we're talking about lists, Ari Lax has been really consistent about writing about Modern on Star City Games.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a really good job summing up the format. And he's pushed a couple lists. Including the Hate Bears list that Kibler sort of started. He's kind of evolved into a Naya list,
mm-hmm.
playing all the good 2-drops and really good Planeswalkers. Another local player, sort of local, but well-known, Dan Musser, we talked about before. I know he has switched over to Junk just for the chance to play Elspeth today.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about it on Facebook a lot. So I think those decks with Elspeth, and those Naya lists and those white lists, you might see a bunch of those as well, and those are really fair decks, so it's kind of, I like playing fair decks.
Yeah.
It says the guy who played Splinter Twin for 6 months. But hey, whatever it takes. I will say what you said about Blue Eye Red Controller, Jordan. is kind of, it's a double-edged sword. The good players will have a chance to outplay, but I really like playing against players who are bad with the deck,
oh, yeah,
or just picked it up, and you're just like, oh yeah, sure, you don't know what you're doing, I'm just gonna, and Elliot's over here, like, you know, doing, like, this gesture, like, yeah, that's me, oh wait, that's me.
Yeah, so that does bring us over to Elliot back here. Elliot, you were on a couple of different decks before settling on Blue-White-Red.
Yeah, I tried to make Blue-Black Tezzeret, the good Tezzeret, work in Modern, and I was just trying that. You can't be an aggro deck and Stony Silence, so I kind of gave that up. And then I went into a blue-white, just pure dedicated control deck, and was playing that for a few months, and it was pretty good, but it couldn't beat any resolve threat, and which is kind of an issue with the deck, especially one drops. It couldn't beat a one drop. So I moved on, saw LSV's list, and I'm just changing last minute.
I mean, fair enough. In our group, Elliot is usually the most consistent player, like sticking to a deck. So it's very
stalwart.
Yeah, he's very stalwart. He will tweak a deck, but he won't do a huge change very often. But so it's kind of interesting to see him kind of switch over to a deck. So
we'll see how it goes. Usually I have months of experience with a deck before I actually like take it to a tournament. I stick with it. I play blue decks, and then with blue decks with maybe 5 card changes, you can significantly change your matchups with however the metagame is shifting.
Sure. Yeah, most certainly. I think that blue kind of lends that flexibility.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about Elliot as a player, he is very methodical in nature, and that makes, you know, his deck choices and his control, like his ability to be able to play as a control player very, very good. One story that I must share about Elliot
is
this play actually happened last night at FM. Mike is unprivy to the story yet, so it's really...
I'm excited.
It's pretty great. But, so Elliot is playing a brand new player, first time ever playing the game. We're like, this is a teaching game. I'm sitting by this kid, like, showing him how to play the cards from his hand. It's as basic as, like, hey, at the beginning of your turn, you draw. Right? So this kid is brand new. This kid's, like, just playing creatures, attacking, and Elliot's, like, you know, letting him hit him and stuff like that just to be a good teacher, chump attacking to practice blocking, whatever. Being a really good guy about the whole thing, which, you know, is in direct contrast to apparently that asshole that Morgan thinks I am when I play this game. But if you listen
didn't
to that episode,
you did!
Dead, so dead. 3 planeswalker points. There's one point in the game where Elliot decided to not Supreme Verdict because he can take a crack back to... He's like, he'll crack me back, I'll go to 8, and then next turn I'll Supreme Verdict and get more value. Because that's Elliot, right? It's methodical, but he's teaching, but at the same time, he's going to get him, you know? So Elliot, like, passes the turn, takes the damage, goes to 8. His opponent's like, okay, fine, lava axe you. And Elliot's like, oh, wow, okay, I go to 3. Next turn, Supreme Verdict, leaving up Essence Scatter. So Elliot's feeling really good about his chances at this point. He's like, yeah, so I just count on the next creature he plays and take over from there. Well, his opponent untaps and, like, looks at me and points to the other lava axe in his hand. And I was like, yeah? And I was like, yeah. And I thought Elliot had a negate, but, like, I'm not going to tell this kid to play around a counter spell because he doesn't know how to tap 5 mana for a lava axe yet. So he plays the lava axe, looks at Elliot. Elliot looks at his cards, looks at this kid, looks at me, goes, fuck, and scoops his cards up. So, like, the first time this kid ever played, and this kid was so cute, he's in middle school or something, but he says to Elliot before the match, Elliot has the Dragon's Maze Game League champion mat.
That means I'm a champion.
The kid goes to Elliot, I'm not going to beat you, you're a champion. this kid crushes it. So I slowly stand up, like I'm containing myself, and I walk behind a row of comics, sit down, and you just hear me go, like, people are looking at me like I'm a fucking moron. For the next 5 minutes, I make my way around the store telling everybody. And Elliot just tilted. I've never seen Elliot tilted in my life. But Elliot's just like the rest of the night, and he didn't blink an Aetherling to block my attack for lethal in the next round because he was so tilted. I was like, I was just thinking about that goddamn lava axe.
You're a champion.
Yeah. I'm not going to beat you. You're a champion. I felt so good for this kid. Elliot's just so demoralized.
Well, but you know what? That kid went away from FNM and he won something, and he's going to feel good. He's going to feel good about it.
Right, he's a good guy in this story.
I beat a champion.
He had to leave after the first round. He had to be home by 9 p.m. He left after round one. But he asked me when I was going to be at the store next time. So, you know, that's still...
Oh, you said this kid's in middle school. Should he be listening to Entrance the podcast? Do we have, like, a parental advisory warning on MTG Cast?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that if you're a kid and you're listening to us, you're a pretty badass kid.
You tell all your friends, tweet it, don't listen to your parents.
Just tell them to smoke while you're at it, Morgan.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
do it. It's cool.
Smooth, unfiltered menthols.
Just do it until you're 45 and
quit. Terrible life choices.
Thank you for finishing that statement.
No, kids, don't smoke. It's bad. It's not good for you. Or if you do it, wait until you're 18, because then you can legally buy them, and then I can't tell you what to do.
You can't tell what to do now.
Okay, so anyway, we're down this rabbit trail. Jesse, what are you, like, you're judging this weekend.
Yes.
As a floor judge for side events, correct?
Yeah. All of the stuff that I'm scheduled for this weekend is side events.
Now, I don't know anything about the judge program outside of, like, you have to take tests to be a judge. So chances that we walk in today and they're like, hey, you're judging the main event. What's over under on that?
So chances of what happening?
You just being dragged into the main event, or, like, you say you're a side event judge, does that mean you won't respond to main event calls, or what is that? Like, what is...
Okay, yeah. So basically what happens is months before the event actually goes up, I actually have to apply to be on the event. And all of the judges that you will see on the floor of the main event today will be level 2 or higher. I do not believe they'll have any level 1s on, and from what I saw on the schedule that they posted, mostly because they want judges who are level 2 and higher being on the main event. Now, if I happen to be walking by something at the main event and there is some sort of a judge call, I am allowed to pause the match, and if it's a simple enough call, I will take the call. But almost exclusively, if there's a call on the main event, I will try to make sure that one of the judges who's on the main event will take that call.
Okay. Like, are you going to be testing for level 2 this weekend?
I am not testing for level 2 this weekend.
Okay.
It was a hard choice to make because this is my second GP that I've done. My first GP was Charlotte in February. I did test for level 2 at Charlotte. Which I will honestly say is probably the biggest mistake I've made in the judging program, just because I was so physically drained from judging all day for both of the days of the GP.
The largest event ever at
that
point.
I mean,
it was
at the time, like, before Las Vegas, it was the largest sanctioned Magic event ever. And I mean, even though I was still just doing side events that weekend, it was still huge side events. Like, I was doing a 200-man draft, or not draft, but a sealed event.
Is it pretty draining to do a full day of judging? Like, I know in Magic, I'm mentally drained, but not really physically, and you're walking around, too. That must
be... It's like, I'm walking around, I'm taking calls, like, it's really... Like, you don't think of it as being very draining, but it is after... I mean, it's basically a day of work. And... That's the mindset that I go into all of my events. I always want to put my best effort into the events, and at that event, when I was in Charlotte, I felt like I was split between trying to put my best effort towards judging and my best effort towards passing the L2 exam. And by the time I got to the L2 exam, I found out, one, I wasn't as prepared as I thought I was, and I bombed it, and two, I just felt like my mind was too split all weekend, so I made the conscious decision ahead of time that I was not planning on testing for L2 this weekend, and I really just want to focus on having a good, clean run as a judge at side events this weekend, and that's where my focus is.
Awesome. So this is your second GP.
Yes.
And you know you're doing side events.
Correct.
You know, now, for those listening, you know, a lot of people in the Columbus area know JP, and you know, you judge a lot of local events, do a lot of stuff for Ryan at Comic Town. How different is it, you know, judging, like, I mean, it's a huge scale different, obviously, but, like, how different is it from going from, like, you did an IQ last weekend, correct?
Right.
32 people, you're the judge.
32 people, I'm the only person there, I'm running scores, and that's it.
So how does that compare with, hey, there's X amount of judges at this thousands of player event? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, because at the smaller events, I literally do everything. I'm printing and posting pairings, I'm cutting match slips, I'm recording matches, I'm making judge calls, I'm double-checking things when need be, I'm running top cut, I'm doing everything. At these larger events, a lot of that quote-unquote extra stuff, like reporting like putting in all the match slips, I mean, you have the scorekeepers that take care of that, but at the same time, the event is on such a larger scale that the stuff that's taken away from doing things at the smaller events just get compounded by the size of it at these events.
Fun.
Yeah. it is. It's a blast.
Well, I mean, I want to kind of go into that. So I say sarcastically sort of fun. But you're obviously, you know, I don't want to say you're a glutton for punishment, but you're obviously choosing actively to do this. You enjoy playing Magic, yes?
Yeah, I love playing Magic.
And yet, we go to these big events. Like, we're all sitting in the car like, yeah, we're going to go to this. And you're like, yeah, watch the crafts.
I'm going to be doing side events. I'm going to be watching people do sealed Japanese full Ravnica double block, and I'm gonna have to look up all of the cards from the original Ravnica block. I'm gonna be like, so this does.
The main event. That's awesome.
But why are we just doing that?
But what, so obviously, there's compensation, and the judge program is pretty generous. But I mean,
there's compensation, but for me, one of the things that I have to look at is as a player. Yeah, I am a good Magic player. I consider myself a good Magic player, but for me, I am much more talented as a judge than I am as a Magic player. And for me, it just makes sense that I would use my talents and my skills where I'm best suited. I love judging. Like, most of the time, if it's a constructed event, you will find me judging because I would much rather be judging than playing constructed anything. If it's sealed or draft, it gets iffy because someone loves sealed in this car. But I really love judging. I love being there. I love interacting with the player base. I love interacting with other judges. I mean, it's just, for me, that's what I enjoy doing.
That's all. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the community is that, like, like you actively, like, want to be a part of this. We see so many of these pros, you know, these older pros or former Hall of Famers, like, return to the game because of how much better it's gotten, and you're actively saying, like, I'm not going to play a game of Magic, and I am driving 3 hours to this event so I can play. Now, you say you enjoy judging. Is that also so you can, like, have awesome stories to tell people, too? Like, oh, my gosh, this person, like...
Like,
so many deckless stories, so many stories about people making weird plays. You get to see so many cool things happen just from the judging perspective that, as a player, you're not always involved in because, as a judge, you're seeing things from the outside a little bit more.
Care to expand? Yeah, what is the most, like... I'll ask all three. Funniest necklace error. Funniest judge call, like, strangest thing, and the most interesting thing you've had, like, that you said, like, it's a cool play that you saw.
Cool play. Funniest decklist story, I would probably have to go with the decklist that I turned over and I started looking at and I checked the numbers and was like, okay, numbers turn out all right, let's check in. I have no idea what any of these cards are. This looks like it's written in a foreign language, but it looks close enough to English as far as letters go. And so Guy brings up his list. Everything's in English. You couldn't understand a single thing he wrote on the list. Like, it was impossible to decipher. And eventually we kind of cobbled together exactly what everything was, and I literally wrote in red pen on the side of my list every single card that he had in his deck. I was like, don't do this again. I like my life. I don't like what you made me do with my life.
Funniest judge call.
Funniest judge call.
Funniest judge call. Oh, good God. I've had so many over the years. I would have to say... I think probably it's not necessarily funny, but a call I get a lot is about priority in the end step. I get a lot of calls about that. A lot of people don't understand exactly how priority is passed and used in the end step, and people try to do things in response to things that they can't respond to. And it's something that I feel like players in general should pay attention to quite a bit more, just so that they know exactly what's happening at your end step. You're welcome.
You're the best.
for the audio listeners, I'm sitting here crossing my fingers, hoping he says that you're in. It's all about brand recognition. That's all I care about, folks.
What I don't know, I don't think JP knows that I always have priority at your end step.
So well, I gotta ask them. When is it correct to go to your turn?
Zing.
As far as most interesting play, I'm actually gonna jump away from Magic for a bit because I don't just judge Magic. I'm also pretty high level and active Pokemon judge. And a couple weekends ago, I was judging an event, a very large event in Chicago that was one of the largest independent Pokemon events in Pokemon's history. And I'm sitting and I'm watching a lot of the Top Cut matches. And for most of this past season, I was playing a deck that's called Darkrai Garbodor, which is basically an aggro control deck in the Pokemon world. and I'm watching basically this 14-year-old kid who was basically playing against kids, or not kids, but playing against adults who were 15, 20 years older than him, and I was watching him make plays that, as a player, I knew that deck inside and out. I was just like, there is no way that he's making the right play in these situations. And he was using trainers, and he was using energy attachments, and using different lines than I had ever seen from testing and playing the deck for 4 or 5 months. And he ended up crushing all these 25, 30-year-old Pokemon players who had been playing the game literally longer than he had been alive. And he crushed them and won the whole tournament by making all these cool different lines of play. And this is like a 14-year-old kid in, as a note for the Magic people who are listening, Pokemon is played in age divisions. 11 through 14 is an age division. This kid would never be playing these adults in a normal tournament, and he ended up bashing out all the adults and taking their top prize away from them.
And just that example is, you can be easily be translated into Magic, because mm-hmm. there's so many people that are well-known Magic players that can see those obtuse lines of play that, mm-hmm. you know, on the surface seem like, right. what are you even doing? Like, that doesn't even make any sense. But then, like, they have a plan. And, like, I think that I was listening to Mark Rosewater's Drive to Work podcast, and he was talking about Mark Justice, who's an older player of the game. And he was saying that, you know, Mark Justice have always had a plan, and you would see plays that on the surface looked incorrect, but further down the road, it would come to pass that, you know, he was planning all of these things, and he said that Mark Justice is just one of the people that just were master at the game and just completely understood it. So I think that's a very interesting thing that, you know, with mastery of this game, you learn to make plays that throw people off and to trick them into thinking that you are making the wrong plays, when in turn, you're following along with their plan, and so are they. Because if you could predict what the player across from you is thinking about what you're doing, then you can lead them along a trail that'll lead to their downfall, that'll lead to them making the mistake and giving you the opening that you were planning on 4 or 5 turns down the road.
I mean, like the example we had earlier with Elliot, I mean, that kid perfectly knew
how
to execute his Lava Axe game plan.
Yeah.
So, sorcery speed, so I need to cast during my main phase.
He successfully played around Verdict until he knew it was going to happen, and just, you know, let them cold.
Clearly.
It's a 5-mana sorcery.
JP's dying back here.
Well, I told the story to somebody at another local store, Fog of Dusk, and he goes, "Well, I play that card limited." And we're like, no, this is
this is the standard construction.
Oh, man. He goes, "Oh," and looks at Elliot.
No. Sometimes when that decision tree that you've decided to do that will pay off 4 or 5 turns later doesn't work.
That's true as well.
That's true. I mean, like, obviously, you can plan things out, but sometimes things change your plan. But I don't expect a lava axe. It's actually a pretty good plan. Yeah, you don't expect a lava axe.
Well, it was really funny because Elliot goes, "Yeah, I really wasn't expecting the lava axe." And she goes, "Yeah, I have 3. Elliot goes, "How many?" And the great thing was, game 2 of that match wasn't a teaching game anymore. Like, I tried to explain to him the interaction between Restoration Angel of Flash and Augur Bolas. And, like, he didn't get it, but he pretended he did for the sake of us or whatever. And, like, so in the second game, he's like, "Yeah, and your turn, Flash, Master, and Gene, you'll trigger a little top 3.
Who's going to shortcut all this stuff? You shut your mouth.
He just starts going, and this kid's just like, "I don't know." Like, he fucked with the wrong bear.
Now, JP, all the stories you told us are very nice. But none of them really, they weren't juicy enough. Give me something juicy. I want to know something funny.
You want to tell a good one about a guy that didn't register his deck correctly with lands?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there may or may not be a local player. Will, for the sake of anonymity, we'll call this local player Elliot.
I'm starting to mouth to Mike, who was it? I want to know.
Who may or may not have issues whenever I'm judging events at registering his lands correctly in his deck. And may or may not have done this multiple times. And may or may not have done this with the same bloody land both times.
Never happens unless you're there.
I know. And it's like you might as well just, like, here's my blank checklist. I'll fill this out after round 1 and take the game loss in round 2 next time.
Hey, I still won when I got that
game. You did! You still
true.
Won.
Elliot likes to come back from behind.
What was that?
What?
Was that a weird joke?
What? No.
Anyway, moving on.
I just feel like JP being really like fatherly about it. Like JP's got like the corncob pipe and he walks up to Elliot. Well, son, want to have a catch while I tell you how you fucked up?
That's why Morgan's like, he'll come to mind.
God damn it.
You said it. You can't unsay it.
Well, I can. I mean, I'm
shut up. You can't unsay it.
I can edit this shit right now. Take it out.
So I think what would be really interesting if we delineated some goals, all five of us, for the weekend.
Sure.
Like, you know, JP obviously will have a different batch of goals than we will, obviously. But I kind of want to hear what everybody hopes to get out of this, because I know we're all probably have very different goals.
Well, that was your suggestion. Why don't you start then?
Okay. I want to, this is ambitious, since I've played maybe a week of Modern. I wouldn't mind day twoing, you know, obviously.
That's I wouldn't kind of, mind it. I mean, if it's in the cards.
Right. I mean, I have some reading I can do. But, like, you know, day two is kind of obviously just a good benchmark goal. But playing the format and learning what the cards are in the format isn't a bad start either. I would say day two, and I would walk out happy. I won't walk out disappointed without day two. And honestly, I'm here just to have fun. Playing a format that's new to me, and it'll be a good weekend regardless. But definitely day two would be, I would walk out happy. We'll only go clockwise. You can't tell, we're all on the same card.
I think it's been mentioned a few times. That's okay. So I guess like a goal for me, you know, also would be, you know, today too. Like, I have not day two to GP. And honestly, I haven't gone to many GPs. Like, despite like my resurgence back into the game, like that's just one thing that, you know, it's hard to commit the whole weekend to. You know, especially with the wife. You know, it's like yeah. So I'm going to be gone all of this weekend, and then we're going to go back to work. And we're just not going to talk for the week. Is that cool? So it's a little rough. But I definitely like the day two. I'm not really playing, you know, okay, my goals are definitely different from Jordan's. I'm not really trying to learn the format. I'm actually trying to play the deck that's punishing the format. So, like, oh, you play terrible lands and you shock yourself. Okay, you're dead to Goblin Guy. That's just what you are. So, like, I have fun with the deck, but I know very much that I'm trying to play spoiler a little bit to get there. So I'd like to day two. I'd like to, you know, make that a milestone, you know, maybe get that first pro point. It would be awesome. But also, I think another goal is the Modern Masters Cube is live. And I would like to, at some point this weekend, sit down and have some fun drafting that. That is a goal as well. So
I think that's an achievable goal. Elliot, what are your goals?
So one of the things I've been trying to work on is being able to just pick up a deck and play it well. Not perfectly. And as mentioned earlier, I typically go with one deck and then kind of play it. And I know the deck very well. What I'm trying to do is just pick it up and play it well. So I picked up a deck that was TP, blue by red control. I haven't played a whole lot. I think I played two matches so far with it. And I want to not make obvious mistakes. That's pretty much my goal with this deck today. Day two, maybe not, but my goal is to not completely mess it up.
You know, that's a good point, and I kind of pick on you a little bit here, Jordan. Like, we traded decks for a Gen Con, you know, and I gave Jordan a deck with Sphinx of Revelations. And, like you started playing the game, you know, recently playing, like you said, White Weenie, aggressive, moved into mid-range, because it's kind of the natural progression. You want a creature to be bigger. But, like, getting into that control strategy, you know, is a little difficult. And I think I've mentioned on here before that, like I really like, I think one of the things that I pride myself in is being able to assess how a deck works quickly. You know what I mean? Because when you're younger, I remember, looking back at decks, I'll pick out, you played Esper, Elliot, forever. A deck with a Aphelia Drownyard. As a kid, you're just like, what does this card do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it does anything.
So, but, so definitely I could totally appreciate the desire to just, you don't expect to just, crush everybody, but I want to be confident enough that I could just pick up a deck and know the game plan and know I should play it. Are you going to make the correct, are you going to, Mark Justice them, and make, ten-year plans? Probably not. But I like that sentiment very much.
All right. So you, Morgan. Day two would be awesome, 100%. I'd just like to not have any fucking stories about me screwing up. My God. I can't live down pathing my own token. I cannot live that down, ever. So, I would just not to make an ass out of myself the entire GP.
You might as well turn back around. Shit, we're not gonna make registration, guys. Morgan needs to go.
Day two would be awesome. Just having a good time. I think that there's so many times that, we're in the later rounds of a Magic tournament and, you just have that thought to yourself, why the hell am I here? I am in Detroit on Saturday night. What am I doing with my life? And I just don't want to have that thought. I just want to be like, hey, I'm a GP. I'm with, with my friends, I'm having a good time, and I want to keep that mindset throughout the entirety of the GP, and just keep a positive attitude throughout everything, no matter what happens. I think it's a good goal to have. So, lastly, we'll shift over to JP. JP, okay. what are some of your goals?
Okay.
For
well, like everyone else, I want a day two. I had my day two about 2 or 3 years ago, so I mean, it would like day twoing is wonderful, it's awesome. But judging goal wise, for me, the big thing that I talked with the head judge of the event, Jared Silva, he sent out a request for what people were interested in doing, and my request for the event is I want to be partnered with or be around judges who are just going to grill me on things that are going to be on the L2 exam. Like, my goal for this weekend is either to walk out incredibly shaken on how well I don't know the comp rules, because that's really my weakness as a judge. I don't know the comp rules that well. Or I want to walk out of the event feeling reaffirmed in the fact that I am getting closer to being able to pass the L2 exam. And then the other goal for the event for me is networking. One of the wonderful things about GPs is the fact that not only are there players from all around the country and all around the world coming into the event, you have judges coming in from literally all around the world. And networking with those judges and getting to know those judges who you wouldn't be working with on a regular basis is such a huge asset to have as you travel around and you try to go further and deeper into the judging program. So those are my two goals for the weekend.
I got a warm-up question for you, JP.
Can
I ask you a question?
I hate you.
Go ahead.
So, I have a Tezzer, Agent of Bolas.
Okay.
And I have an Ink Moth Nexus in play.
Sure.
It's been in play for an upkeep.
Uh-huh.
I animate it.
Okay.
I target it with my Tezzeret.
Okay.
My opponent has a Humility.
Okay.
What is that creature?
Oh.
Torn background.
After the target resolves.
Oh, really? We don't talk about Legacy a lot. We talk about Legacy a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I love Legacy. We're playing Legacy.
Like, first of all, like, it being game loss, we're replacing the Humility, because it's not modern.
But we should say with Humility. Humility is an enchantment that makes all creatures 1/1s, and they lose all abilities.
Tezzeret's ability is it makes target artifact a 5/5 artifact creature.
Yeah. So my question to you is this. Your opponent somehow flashed in a Humility, or the Humility was already in play?
It's already in play.
Humility is already in play. You have a 5/5 doomed because of the timestamp effect that's involved. Because Tezzeret's ability is activated after Humility has already set the power and toughness of the creature to being a 1/1, and you put another power and toughness setting ability on top of that layer, or another timestamp on top of the previous timestamp, the latest timestamp is the one that stands, so you have a 5/5 doomed.
Even though my Inkmoth Nexus has flying in effect.
Well, it doesn't have
but it doesn't have anymore.
It doesn't have flying in effect anymore.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Because, so you activate Inkmoth Nexus, it is now a 1/1 dude.
It's a 1/1.
Then you activate Tezzeret's ability, it becomes a 5/5. So it's not even a layering issue, it's just a timestamp issue.
It's a timestamp issue within one of the sublayers.
Within one specific layer.
Right.
Okay. It's a dream within a dream within a dream.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
So can I ask another one with banding and phasing combined?
Oh, fuck yourself.
Never mind.
The new player in me is like, banding? What is
you don't want to know what banding is. It's not worth it.
As much as judges, we joke about banding. Banding isn't all that difficult.
Yeah, it's really
like,
nice.
There are a couple little weird intricacies, but I mean,
but
on the whole,
so good. Oh man, banding
is fairly straightforward and understandable.
I think the only thing that if you do understand banding, you just win. I think that's what that is, right?
That's how you decide who like instead of like rolling to go first. It's like, what does banding mean? Oh, I don't know. Okay, I play.
Going for
all right. I think that's a good a note to end on. We will have a secondary podcast. We'll try to.
Are we going
to
splice them together? Or are we
I think we're going to try to splice them together. So this could just be the ending of the first half.
Seeing all this optimism right now, we're like, yeah, here's our goals. So this is like, I don't want to talk to the microphone. Get out of my face, Morgan. Get out of my face, Morgan.
That'll probably be what it's like driving back.
All weekend.
But who knows? Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be bad. But we do thank you for joining us for this half of the At Your Instep podcast. And have a good one. Hello, and welcome back to the At Your Instep podcast. This is episode post-GP, and I'm here with all the same people. We got Jordan, we got Mike, we got JP, we got Elliot. And we are heading back from GP Detroit. It was pretty eventful. It was my first GP, and it was definitely a sight to behold. There were over 1,400 players there, so it was, you know, a full 15-round, you know, GP, day one and day two. We just kind of wanted to give you a quick recap, kind of our personal stories from the GP. We also wanted to talk about, you know, touch on, you know, GP coverage in general. Mainly the fact that this one didn't really have any, which is pretty shocking. Yeah. Especially for it being such a high-profile modern tournament, you would think that there would be, you know, some level of coverage in some facet, but there just wasn't anything. And so we definitely wanted to touch on that. We also wanted to touch on, of course, you know, the deck list that we actually saw there, and the winning deck list, the actual standings, kind of just wrap everything together and make this one nice little package. So I'll kind of give a you know, pass around the room, and we'll go ahead and we'll start with Mike over here. So Mike, how was your GP experience?
It could have been better. Not day two, which is unfortunately going to be a reoccurring theme here.
Correct.
I you know, started. We had two buys. Lost round one to Scape Shift, where they're playing Prismatic Omen, so I died pretty quickly to a Primeval Titan. I don't think regular Scape Shift is much of a worry for me, but he was a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a game three where I could have not cast. Like, I put him on remand. I could have not cast a spell, but like I essentially let him top deck Escape Shift by giving an extra draw, and I didn't need to, so that was rough, and I realized it immediately, and it was, you know. Went on my next round, beat Channel Firewall's own Patrick Cox, so that, you know, I was feeling really good, riding pretty high, and then it just went downhill from there. Lots of, you know, I was playing a very aggressive deck with very, you know, 19 lands, and I just had a lot of, you know, a lot of matches where, you know, pretty much all my matches went to game three. A lot of my games are die roll dependent anyways, and just flooded out a ton. My last match in contention was, you know, I actually almost went to time against Blue White Red, which is really hard for my deck to do. I had 13 lands in play. I had three or four fetches in the yard, so I'm like running on like two cards, like two lands left in my library, but I couldn't beat a Lightning Helix at the end. It was very frustrating. So I wish it would have gone better. I felt the deck was a solid choice. And, I mean, like, I didn't owe to any of my rounds. Like, each one was really hard fought. And just, you know, with a deck like that, you have to run, you know, not to be punny here, but hot. So I was hoping that the goblin guides would guide me to the end. And like those asshole goblins tend to do, they fucked me. I mean, that's what they did.
I appreciate that end piece here, but, Mike, there's already an LSB in the world. We don't need another punny guy.
Oh, I know. I'm his excess weight.
Oh.
Get out.
Oh, man.
The more you
do,
the more you're into it.
All right. So we'll shift to my left here. And so, Jordan, how was your GP experience?
I had a lot of fun. Definitely more...
Code for losing.
Yeah. I definitely had more fun after the GP than I did during the GP, that's for sure. I love the modern format now. I never understood it before this weekend, and I wouldn't claim to have a grasp on it. But I enjoyed it. I was on the Green Red Tron, as we discussed in part A of this episode. Which, by the way, you should listen to that first. This won't make any sense. But I was a little more disappointed in myself than I think was fair to me, I guess. Like, I was being unfair to myself. I was really upset. I went 4-4 in the drops. I was really unhappy with the way that I played, but there were a lot of times when, I don't know this format well enough, so there were a lot of times I go, well, I just drew bad, and I didn't actually give myself an accurate, well, where were my play mistakes, as opposed to I just drew bad. So, I don't know, I gave myself a really hard time, but for my first round of Sanctioned Magic happened in round two of a GP, I feel okay about 4-4. Now after I've kind of had some time to process it, I got triple sewing salted in round 7. So that, like, I'm playing with two Grove of the Burmoles and a Forest. And then an Eye of Rugen, actually. I had an Eye of Rugen. So,
that's great.
And, like, my opponent was, like, he was just doing his thing. And, I was mentally coping with the fact that I was done. And during that mentally coping, like, I'm not going to scoop it,
I win an out, and I lose an out. But during that mentally coma, I was like, you know, X3 is okay when you haven't played the format ever before in your life. So you'd be okay with that. And it was, and it was fun, and I had a great time. You know, today we Modern Master Cube, which is great. And then I spent $15 to play one round of Modern. I don't want a box that I didn't win. So, but yeah, I had a good time. It was, you know, 4-4 is not the greatest, but, you know, I'll take never playing Modern before.
I'm going to give you an out on this, too. All right. I will say this. Cedric Phillips, who you crafted his necklace after, watched him do it, did not do well at all this weekend either. And he was frustrated with his performance. There were no Tron lists near the top at the end. There was a ton of hate for it. So I think combining your, you know, lack of knowledge of the format, you know what I mean? Like, for example, having Soul cast on you and going, oh, this is what it feels like to have that card. But at the same time, it really seemed like there wasn't a lot of Tron Day 2. Like, it was hated out pretty quickly. I mean, all the black-green decks were running, like, Fulminator Mages, like, the full four in their boards. And,
right.
So I will give you an out. There was a lot of hate for you.
Right.
You still sucked. But,
right. So that's kind of the thing is, like, on Cockatrice, where you don't play the best people, you play a lot of combo decks and then, like, people try to.
Wait, what is that?
On this one website.
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah. Wizards got cocky and named the card after it. But, you know, like, you don't play, like, these like, tier one decks a lot. So you get really good with your deck, but I don't know if I'd say you can limit up.
Sure.
And Raymond was like, okay, next turn I get drawn, I'm going to play card. And he's like, oh, yeah, play whatever. I don't even know the names of cards yet. He's like, play this 2/2 that kills one of your lands. And I'm like, oh, well, I hope I draw a Tron piece next turn. Oh, wrong one. Never mind, we're done here. So, like, just kind of like learning that, I think Cedric Holmes had a lot to do with that. You know, Paco Streamer, people kind of picked up on the idea that everybody in their brother's going to play the deck, and the deck is easy to play. So, that's why I played it. And I got hit out, and I got punished for it.
That's good. I can't say that my own performance was at all what I wanted, but it's not what I didn't expect. I would say, like, I'm not really familiar with the format, and my deck isn't necessarily very powerful, so I didn't expect to do well. But I just completely shit the bed on this one, guys.
You sound like a kid trying to, like, prepare their mom and dad. Like a lot of kids didn't get a good grade on this test. The material was really hard. The teacher's going to let us take it over again. Well, what'd you get? Morgan, what did you get?
I definitely X-a-million at this point. I can't even,
X equals...
What would X equal...
Well,
no. It would be, they're all holding up a finger one, but I didn't X one. That wouldn't make any fucking sense.
No, you won X.
No, X. X, no, you said X a million. We know what a million is.
Yeah.
Solve for X, Morgan.
You had a buy, right?
Yeah, I did have a buy.
Oh, good. Okay. There we go.
Okay. So.
Two. All right. Good.
So basically, I had lost so many matches that I just ended up mostly IDing or intentionally drawing with my opponents just so we would both get points, because I feel I'm a nice person. And we just played for fun. And it was a good experience.
Casual level GPs.
Bro, I paid $40 for 8 Planeswalker points. Oh, me too.
Sure. But whatever. Hopefully it'll come back to me. Karma, whatever.
Well, by the way, people, in real life, the jokes don't go this way. I get to pick on Morgan a lot during At Your Instep. But in real life, I'm the guy that gets picked on. So it's great for the role reversal. I love it.
I do a lot of stupid things. I just want the listeners to know that. And sure, maybe IDing with my opponents in the 9th round when we both have about 6 losses, maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's incorrect. But at that point in time, I also didn't give a shit. So it didn't really matter to me.
Did you concede a match that you had already won? Just so you could leave to get food?
Yeah, oh, no, that was yours.
No, I did that. Yeah, I beat a guy in the Super
But that was in Standard Super Series. Who gives a shit about that?
Food was higher EV.
Oh, well, thanks.
Oh, food was such higher EV. Oh, my gosh.
I lied to a judge about how to fill up the menu.
Yeah, that was definitely interesting. We so, obviously, shit to bed in the GP. Did not do well. That's fine. Don't really care anymore. I was... Remember when I said I wanted to keep that promise to keep a positive attitude? Man, that went out the window around, like, round 5 or 6 when I just was kept losing and losing back and forth, and I was hungry and tired and just full of hate.
I have never seen you so upset, Morgan.
I was...
You were out of it.
I was really upset.
If you would have came up to us and said a hashtag enchantapack, Morgan would have punched you.
That's not accurate. But yeah.
Challenge.
It was definitely a trying time on Saturday evening, and it did not get better until I went to bed, probably. I don't know. Maybe it got a little bit better when we got food. Anyway, Saturday was fine. We did the Super Series. That didn't go very successfully either.
Sunday
was the Sunday Super Series. Should not go successfully either. I lost my first round, won my second round. And then I'm de-sideboarding after my second round, and I'm looking at my deck, and I'm like, well, there should be another card here, and I'm just looking through everything, I'm sorting it out, and being like, oh, wait, I'm remembering what I wrote down on my deck list, but it doesn't match the deck I have in my box, so I have to now go to a judge and be like, I think I have a deck list error at this point in time. JP was actually one of the judges there. I did talk to the head judge about it, and he said, give me your name, we'll see. But he didn't really do anything after the round started, and I was like, well, I don't want to get started. I'm going to call a judge on myself.
So I come over to the table. Correct. I'm like, well, this is fun.
Yeah, so I go, hey, I talked to the head judge, but I'm pretty sure that I have a deck list there. So JP and I walk away from the table, and I tell him, like, hey, I might have wrote down one Thraska, three Mutilate on my deck list, but I actually just have four Mutilate and no Thraska. You might want to check that, just in case.
And there were totally one Thraska, three Mutilate on the deck list, and four Mutilate, no Thraska in the deck.
So yeah, so it proves that while, being, honest with yourself and being doing the right thing and being like, hey, I did this wrong, is a good thing. It makes you feel better about yourself. You still get the game loss. Which I'm okay with. Like, I wouldn't want to, like, win that game and just go on a heater, get to top four for some odd reason at X1, and then, like, get my deck list looked at and be like, well, we found this inconsistency and this might be a problem now. Especially when I already fucking know about it. So, I did the right thing.
Oh, there was an inconsistency.
So... So, well, I ended up losing that game and just dropping from the tournament. And so it is what it is. It still was a great first GP for me, and I can't wait for the next one. In all honesty. So, Elliot, how was your time?
Not so great. Kept up my streak of losing to sorceries or an instance that burn your face. So my losses included the opponent that what's the instant 3-mana 3 damage 1 red sack of land shard volley. Shard volley. So I was at 7 life. The guy does not end his turn, but instead shard volleys me main phase. Puts me to 4. I then decide my only real out is to kind of not play around another instant, because then he's passed insurance, so I did not, like, play around a bolt. Fetch land put me to 3, and then tried to Sphinx for 3. And that pretty much closed out the game. I'd have, full fist of cards and out of range, have counterspell, everything. So I fetch my land, go to 3, cast Sphinx. He goes, oh, okay. So I draw 3, gain 3, then he bolts me. This is the opponents I was losing to today in the Grand Prix.
He had the second bolt, right?
Yes, he had it.
No, because it can still kill you from 6.
Oh, no. I, like, untapped with something and he killed... I don't even remember. I was so out of it by that point. But yes, that was my... Those were my losses. It was really frustrating. Ended up 5-4. I finally felt like I was feeling like I was learning the deck as well by the end of the tournament, so... I learned not to audible. I'm not good at picking up decks. So, yep, not a great GP. Had a good time. Detroit Brewing Company. Check it out. It's awesome. They have great beer. Good shepherd's pie.
And lastly, we obviously have all talked about our player experiences at the GP. Something that we actually have never had on this podcast. It's like after a tournament, talking about being a judge for 2 days at a large tournament. even if you're not, like, you know, head judge or main judge of the tournament, you know, you're still there for 2 days. You're still there for an extensive amount of time doing strenuous work. So JP, how was your experience?
For me, honestly, since this was my second GP judging, my first being Charlotte, as I mentioned on Saturday, honestly, for me, it was a little bit more of a relaxing experience just because I knew heading into it about what I was going to expect. I knew that side events were going to be fairly hectic later in the day. I knew that it was going to be two fairly late days of work, so I knew more what to expect heading in. That being said, I feel like the event went well for me. I did get a chance to network with a lot of judges who I had not worked with before. I got to meet up and run a couple cool events. Surprisingly enough, I was checking in for Sunday, and I run into the guys who are passing out some of the parts of the comp for the day, and one of them just happens to be my local RC. So I check off, sign off, get my stuff, and he says, "So, by the way, you're testing for L2 today," and I'm like, oh, because I was really not planning on doing that, because that test is not a joke. That test is really hard. So I was not expecting that to happen. Immediately after he said that, I started trying to find L2 judges and L3s who could basically grill me on comp rules and MTR so that I could be as prepared as possible for the test. The L3 who ended up testing me, Rob, also, we had about 15 to 20 minutes of our interview was based just simply talking about rules and specifically going through how to cast a spell, how to step through the attack phase, just very mechanical things about knowing exactly when things would happen. And he felt that I was prepared. I, to be completely honest, didn't feel 100% prepared. I knew that my score would be better than what it was before, but I didn't know if it would be close enough to passing. But he still felt that I should be pushed to test, and as an L3, I trusted his judgment, went ahead and took the exam, felt that it was easier than the last time I tested for L2. To pass for L2, as long as you're approved from your interview, you need an 80 on the quiz, and I got the wonderful and glorious score of a 78.
So close.
So
I think out of, like, everyone, I think JP kind of got the baddest to beat this weekend. So close.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you can look at it as losing at a win and in. For me, honestly, the 78 was an affirmation that I was actually learning and I was actually growing as a judge, because I'm not going to say the score that I had in Charlotte on that test, just because I like the fact that score is private. I'm okay. I am much more comfortable about saying, hey, I got a 78 on this exam. I'm growing as a judge because it's much better than where my test was. And normally there is a cool down period between when you do your testing for the different levels. This judge is specifically going to talk to my regional coordinator plus a couple of the other regional coordinators that I work with regularly and suggest that my cool down time be accelerated so that I can test at the TCG player event in November. So hopefully by the time November rolls around, I will be in L2. But as for right now, I get to spend the next couple months just really slamming hard into the comp rules and getting MTR and IPG down like the back of my hand.
That's great.
Yeah. Can I ask you about that test?
Sure.
So is it like scenarios you're given, or are they asking you to like regurgitate rules verbatim, or is it both?
It is almost all situations. Every question is asked to you in the guise of, this is the current situation in the match.
Okay.
And then it goes on to what is actually occurring. It never asked strictly what should happen at the beginning of a game.
Okay, so they base it on scenarios.
Right.
So I assume the test changes. Like, was the test you took today the same one you took?
No. There were a few questions that I recognized as repeats from the first time I took the quiz, but there's actually a bank of questions that they pull 50 from. So you can have an idea of what's going to be on there, but you're never going to know exactly what questions are going to be on there. Like, you'll see a couple from the time before when you took it occasionally, but for the most part, 40 of those questions are completely new. Like, I was looking at a lot of the scenarios I was faced with on that quiz, and was like,
this is a question I have never been asked specifically in this context before.
Right. That's probably, I mean, that's probably, like, cool to encounter it that way. Mm-hmm. But, so I just wondered, like, how much you could just take from that. Because, like, you know, having taken similar, not, you know, judge tests, but, you know, licensure testing, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of things you need to know. And, like, it's hard to just take from a question and just, like, study based on that because who knows if you'll receive it again. So, it's probably
exactly.
a little frustrating.
It is very nice that they put everything in the context of a game state or a game situation or a game scenario, because that way you know that, yeah, this looks maybe a little bit odd on paper, but when you actually get down to looking at it, these are things that are real-life situations that could happen in a game, so you know exactly how to apply it.
I like that. That's
right.
So I just
want
to know, have you not, you know, seen the test?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I think, I mean, there's probably a lot of our listeners out there, or some of our listeners out there, that are interested in judging. I know I've always been interested in judging. And I think it's something important to know, like, hey, you know, these are kind of the things you might see. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important because when you are playing, you are part of those game states, it's definitely a good thing to remember that happening and, like, remember what the judge is telling you and what's going on. Because that could become vital information further down the road if it is something that you want to pursue. And in all honesty, you know, talking about it with JP and you know, us asking JP questions that, you know, really studying and, like, potentially shadowing a judge, even if it's just shadowing and not in your intent to maybe take the level one test or anything like that, mm-hmm. but, like, just trying it out, like, seeing what they go through, I mean, and what they actually do, I think that as a competitive level player might be very beneficial, so if that's something that is an interest or something that you just might want to do, take a day off of competitive play and actually, you know, be one with the judge program, per se, I think it definitely is helpful. I think it'll be helpful in just allowing you to see game states that you don't see and play better.
I have a question for you, JP, about that. Like, Morgan brings a good point. Maybe you just... So, someone may want to just try being a judge.
Right.
Is that acceptable? Because I would hate to be, like, that guy who's wishy-washy, like, oh, I'd really want to play this weekend, so I won't be a judge, or, I don't have the $40 to play, I guess I'll go try judging. You know, like, is there a code behind that? Or, like, do you ever just, like, you're a more established judge, but for someone who's kind of in that in-between of, I like both, what's the etiquette for that?
Well, as far as getting onto events, if you're initially, like, if you are a level zero judge or a judge that hasn't passed their level one certification yet, normally what you're doing for events is you're talking to your local L2 or your regional coordinator, who will get you in touch with people who can get you to mentor in events and then help you pass your L1 exam, which hopefully will be something that I'm doing in the near future. Once you get in touch and once you pass your level 1 exam, there's a website called Judge Apps. And on Judge Apps, there are a lot of applications for a lot of different events. And you can't really get to that program until you're in L1, but
that was our exit.
Whoa, real life, folks! All right, well, in 11 more miles, we're going to get off to the next one.
Dumbass. Does that work if you get off in 11 miles?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm full.
Okay.
All right. Back to JP.
So back to the judge program. Once you get in touch and once you pass your level 1 exam, Judge Apps is what I usually use to apply for events, especially larger events like Star City Game, a lot of stuff on the Open Series, the TCG player events that are in the area, but also just getting in touch and knowing your local store owners and letting them know, hey, I'm a level 1 judge. If you need someone this weekend, I would love to be able to help out. If you need someone to fill in another judging slot, if you have an open slot, getting to know the other judges in your area that you're working with. If you are planning on judging, you normally do need to schedule that stuff ahead of time. So it's far in advance. You really do have to make choices about events.
Okay. I mean, and that helps. So mm-hmm. people are looking at it like, oh, well, it's actually, judging is a commitment. And a lot of players don't grasp that.
Right. Like, a lot, I will say this, a lot of the times, like, for me, as far as, like, what I'm doing judging-wise, like, normally by this time in September, October, I've looked at the events that are coming up pretty much through April or May, and I already know what events I'm applying for, what events I'm most likely going to get on and are working for all of the things that I judge for. So really, for me, my play schedule is scheduled months in advance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty insane, because, I mean, the players kind of go through the same thing. I mean, the more dedicated you are to the game, the more you plan right. out and actually do, so...
Exactly. You know which opens you're going to, you know which ATQs right. you're hitting up, you know which Grand Prix trials you need to save money for, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's really insightful, and I'm really glad that we have this opportunity to get another aspect of the Magic world, because I think, like, obviously we're very a competitive-focused podcast, but, you know, being able to talk to more pieces of the community... I think is very, very huge. So we'll kind of move on, and we actually wanted to discuss something that kind of exploded at the GP, which was there was no coverage, you know, and that's something that was on Twitter a whole lot as pros and calling people like
the fact that there was no coverage was covered by more media outlets. Yes,
that's true.
And Wizards have been brought with them.
that's exactly right.
Like, I'll be honest, I was over judging side events pretty much all the day. Like, was Twitter really exploding that much over the fact that there was no coverage at all?
Yeah, it was bad yesterday. Yeah.
It was real bad. There were people that were directly tweeting Helene Bergeau. I mean, there were people that were upset because this was, like, the largest, Midwestern GP in the fall, the largest fall GP that they've ever had or something of that nature. So it was a very, very large GP. It's modern, so it doesn't get played a lot. And a lot of people, I think, just felt it was important that this get broadcast, mainly because there were no other GPs anywhere else.
I'm also just surprised from, like, a business aspect. This is the format Wizards is trying to push. It's supposed to be modern, 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 and then no coverage on the biggest modern event. Like, I'm not necessarily just pissed, but confused.
Yeah, sales would have exploded. Tron's like $200 to build. You would have players just buying. Well, not after this.
To be fair, they don't make money off of that. But it does seem weird that, like, hey, here's Modern Masters a few months ago. We don't care about Modern GPs. Like, I get it. I didn't even want to bring my phone in Detroit, let alone a whole camera system. Okay? But you gotta suck it up at some point.
Hey, to all of our Michigan fan base, because we actually know at least one of you is out there.
I'm one of Burton Catacombs.
First, you're welcome for the Burton Catacombs. Thanks for finding us. We really felt honored. And Detroit was actually fairly nice. The small section that we were in.
You mean the convention center?
we lived 6 feet away from the convention.
Listen, I don't want to lose any listeners, guys. Anyway, coverage. So there was text coverage. But just no video coverage, and I think video coverage is huge. And it's really weird for them to be, like, so hard on video coverage. Like, I really feel like they've been doing such a good job at trying to get video coverage to GPs. And even going international and having international GPs getting covered, which they've never used to do. And they just kind of dropped the ball on GP Detroit, just like, no one's here.
Especially with the explosion of Twitch and streaming over the past year or so.
Exactly.
It's almost not the exception anymore to have GGS or Wizards themselves streaming anything. It's almost the rule that if there's a GP that weekend, Wizard is bringing someone out to cover it for their Twitch channel.
Yeah.
And all the pros were there. I mean, you had day one matches that were insane. We watched, you had Riduk and Shahar Shenhar playing again today. I mean, how was that an amazing storyline? And you had a stacked top 8.
Yeah.
A stacked top 8. You're not telling me, I mean, the amount of viewers that would pull in, because I hate to tell you, Legacy on Star City is not competing with watching, you know, Willie Idol and Josh Relayton play in top 8. It's just not going to happen.
No, not at all. I would, and, like, that's something, because obviously we couldn't see every match that happened. But we couldn't see the top, you know, 8 go down necessarily. But if I could go back and watch it, you bet I would. Like, 100%. I would love to see those matches, but we can't. Like, it just will never happen.
You might be able to. Brian Kibler is doing something.
Oh, yeah. So there was a thing that Brian Kibler posted on his blog, which was a GP Detroit coverage bootleg. So he used his iPhone and recorded stuff. He recorded two or three deck techs of him, LSV, and Chapin. So he did those three deck techs. So those are up on his blog if you want to look at those. And he did, like, a day one wrap up. But it was pretty funny to see. He was one of the more vocal pros about there just being no coverage. But
I think this was like a huge misstep by Wizards. Mike is exactly right. They were titans, like titans of the current Magic scene, battling against each other, and it's not something you get to see very often. And it's very disappointing that we just did not have a chance to share that with the people that didn't get to go to Detroit. I hope that they do take this feedback from the community, even if it is somewhat, you know, venomous. I hope that they take it to heart and try to do their best to really provide coverage for these, like, for these prominent constructed GPs. For them to not have coverage at a limited GP, I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because it's a limited GP, you can only have that to be so entertaining. It's mainly the players that make it entertaining, and not necessarily like the cards or the decks. Like the skill of the players is what makes a limited GP, in my opinion. But with a constructed GP, like, you want to see those deck lists. You want to see people innovating and trying something different. So I just think that it's a missed opportunity, and it's very disappointing that it just wasn't there.
One thing I saw at day one, there's like Wizards employees even bringing a big tour of like business people coming through and explaining how the event was set up and showing during registration, like giving them a tour pretty much about different aspects and why they had to organize the tournament set up different ways. And it just seems odd that they did not have coverage. Or maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe they're all busy giving fancy tours. I don't know.
Who knows?
The big thing with me for coverage is, and Brian Kibble actually tweeted this, and it is exactly how I feel. And it goes back to what I feel like when I'm just watching like a Cedric Phillips or a Michael Jacobs stream. I like watching Constructed because I get to see people playing my deck, right? I get to see how, like, if I ever wanted to play Jund, I would love to have gone back to redo the GP Detroit, see how does he play Jund? Or Shahar Shundar playing Blue, White, Red. And in Limited, I'm like, I'm sorry for the rain, by the way. It's starting to get a little bit worse. So this is the end. We love you. Hashtag Enchant Effect. But as we exit here and not miss this one. Actually, somebody else talk while we go on this exit.
No, I mean, okay, to pick up what you're saying, I mean, it's very true. I mean, and honestly, not just that, like, we'll talk about the lists here in a minute,
yeah.
But, like, Reed Duke made, and I think Odin Turnwald had the same list, but they made a really interesting card choice today, and it paid off really well for them, and I'd like to see how they used it. I can hear stories about it all day. Okay, oh, good example of this. All I heard yesterday and this morning was that the Slivers deck was doing well. You could hear it. The Slivers deck, it made day two. I don't know who was playing it. I would love to see that on camera. Show me that weird deck. You can't, because it's not going to make, you know, they're only going to post the top 16 lists. You're not going to get to see the interesting brews. You're not going to see it. But you could put it on camera. You could show the people. You could do the video deck tech. It's very frustrating to know that, you know, especially since, you know, as a brewers, like, look at a Conley Woods, okay, who loves to bring a unique list out, okay, and try it out. Like, see how it works. Show how, you know, the brew can do this. It's your chance to, I don't know, it's your chance to show off the best of this great format. And I guess, like Elliot said, like, how can you be pushing a format and then, like, not push the format? Does that make sense? Like, hey, please play Modern. We're not going to show you, you know, playing Modern. Like, we're not going to watch it. You know, a kid making a macaroni, painting your picture or something, right? Like, isn't this good? No. Can it be on a refrigerator? No.
What card was Jund playing this weekend that was pushing him over the edge?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to get all teary-eyed here. Chandra. Oh, Chandra.
You have
it. Chandra, Pyromaster. Almost won GP Detroit. And honestly, that's good enough for me. I mean, we're just out of here, right?
You won. You congratulations.
That's game, boys. That's
game. If you don't know, Chandra is Mike's favorite, like, Planeswalker or
anything, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Chandra anything. So, by the way, I'm the best friend ever. I won game day with Chandra's face on it. Gave Mike the mat. Because I never lost it.
I do. Aww. I'm framing it.
Oh, so you're going to do the little thing with the cards?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because I got my foil Chandra's, too. I don't need to get into this, okay? It's weird.
We got it. My obsession is a problem. I understand.
I can stop any time.
Yeah, so that kind of brings us into kind of the deck list. We won't harp anymore on coverage. Everyone kind of knows it's an issue. Hopefully it gets fixed. But the interest...
No, I'm sorry. I'm not even cut you off. But the sad thing is, hopefully it gets fixed. Like, literally, it should, there's not a hopefully thing, like it isn't like a connecting flight, make it, you know what I mean? Like, just do it!
Wait, how do we go from the World Cup, which was the best, like, it's better than some ESPN's games, right? It was beautiful. I was so happy to watch, I watched the whole thing on my drive back from Kansas City. 10 hours of me and my cell phone plugged into the charger, hogging the charger.
The car had cruise control, so you didn't have to worry about it.
It was the best.
Drove itself, it's fine.
My buddy drove, it was great. I just laid it back and watched the World Cup.
How many exits did you miss?
and then we go to this where we don't even have it. Why can't, like, there was that article on Star City series about a while back and we talked about it. But how can we go from the World Cup to, we'll tweet some of the results? Like, yeah. It makes me really mad as a fan. And then it's like, what if you're this player who did really well this weekend? This was your chance to get your one of life in a feature match. Now, why would I, you know what I mean? I got a feature match and it was a blast. And I'm really sad that someone else didn't get that new life opportunity.
Yeah. So I was going to cut you off.
It's fine.
It's a frustrating thing. So
I agree. It's super frustrating. And Mike's right. It needs to get fixed. So we'll kind of move on here, and then we'll go into the results. So
I got to watch it.
I mean, we'll talk about the final match. So the winner was playing a another Podlist. His name was Josh McClain. And he actually was in second place at GP Miami against Reed Duke. And the weird thing is, the finals was him and Reed Duke again. So it was a rematch. How amazing is that?
To end up on the right side of the pairings to get that to happen again? Right. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's insane.
It would be a great story to tell. Like some new
man, it would be great if you could, like, make a video of it and, like, share it with... Oh, it would be so good. If only that could happen.
Yeah, no, I talked to Josh for a little bit after his match, and he said that him and Reed joked about it, but they never really... You know, like, you joke about that in top eight, but you both know the randomness. You know, like, the cards got to run really right for two people to meet, especially when you don't know the variants. And for them to do that is insane. The games were very interesting. Game one, Josh pulls the 6-1 lander with Birds of Paradise. Reed bolts Birds of Paradise. And Josh
always
just
bolts the bird.
Draws cards and dies. Pretty much what happens. Double death right from Reed Duke. And just Reed and John kind of smash him out. Game two, Reed is pressuring Josh very, like, there's a lot of pressure. Running out of outs for Josh. Josh draws the final piece of the combo on the final turn he had. And goes off and defeats him. Game three was just a little bit more standard. Josh has cards, Reed doesn't have answers. And that's just how the matchup went. But it's funny, the one thing I noticed, the collectiveness of Reed Duke versus the collectiveness of other Magic players. Like the average Magic player, when he's losing, he knows he's about to lose, has this very defeated look about his demeanor, the way he draws cards, the way he taps lands, etc. Reed Duke is the same methodical. He has no blockers. He's at three. His opponent has two kitchen fences. He attacks. Reed sits there and thinks, tanks it for a minute. He knows he's losing, but he's still thinking, and then out of nowhere pops up and goes, "Hey, good game!" Shakes his hand and, like, smiles and picks up his cards. And, like, he just snaps. And, like, he can focus on the game. So I thought that was really interesting. But good job to Josh. What's up?
Not just because of the full lush head of hair. It's, I want to be able to do that.
You want to be able to be happy when you lose? We all, you know, I'm going to be, I said this today too, it's a lot easier to be happy when you lose when you're still walking away with $2,000.
Yeah, that's not a bad consolation prize.
Because Mike thought, we all thought that Reed had lost in the round before just because we were just listening to the overhead. And Mike said, "I'm going to go ask him about Pyromancer." And it was, or I'm sorry,
Pyromaster. She's the master.
Sorry, I apologize. But I was like, "You should have said the right time." He goes, "Why? You just won $2,000.
I'm like,
and I was like, "Well, he just got bashed out." I was like, "Yeah, it'd be one thing if he got bashed out in the final land." And he got kicked out of the turn. I was like, "Well, both just happened." So I don't. But $2,000. Fair enough. But so there's a really interesting finals because you saw somebody just get crushed game one. And someone battle hard in game two and three. So Josh McClain got his redemption, or can I say justice?
Look at you.
Now, do you think Reed was like, well, since this wasn't on videotape, it doesn't count? You can watch me beat you, but you can't ever see this again.
Oh, when you read the text report for this finals match like you should, read Duke's picture. You know how they have the picture of the players in-game? I am going to be in that picture.
Oh, my God.
Because I am sitting literally right behind Reed Duke.
What did I tell you about the yuppies? What did I tell you?
So, you can just see me. I actually tried to look away because I didn't want to be in a picture.
And yet, here you are.
But guys, I pretty much was in the top eight. So.
Well, I'm pretty sure that if I had been there, I would have just melted. So,
it would have been fine. Before he would have able
to handle himself. So. I had, like, a sign that kind of said,
every time Reed Duke, like, walked past Morgan this weekend, like, the GP Reed, just, like, you hear a little swooning noise. And got a little, like, ooh. Like, what just happened, Morgan? He's like, Reed Duke walked by.
It was a good time. So, another kind of interesting thing that happened with the lists, they were all, a lot of them, not all of them, obviously, but what, 7 out of the 8 were green, black, X, pretty much?
Oh. Either Jund or Jund without red.
Yeah, so it was Jund, green, black, and Malaripod. So, a lot of them were green, black based.
Huh.
And then Affinity.
When did green become the best color?
Since there's this card called, Deathrite Shaman that got printed.
And Scavenging Ooze gets to be in the format, too. Totally fair.
Yeah,
totally
it seems good. Fine. Like, it seems completely okay. So there's just these powerful green cards that are getting played. And one of the breakout cards that actually appeared in the winning list was Archangel of Thune. So this is pretty insane. So it combos well with Spike Feeder. As we already kind of discussed when we were looking at the list. Malyripod, this is still a deck,
Yeah.
Apparently, the almighty Scavenging Ooze cannot stop it.
I want to also say, looking at the top 16, I want to give a shout-out to Dan Musser again.
Yeah, Dan Musser. Yeah, he got 10th place.
Really good player in the Ohio community, and obviously, good player overall. Has had a pretty good run the last few weeks here, winning a PTQ for Dublin here at the end of the season, and then he ended up taking, I think he said 10th.
Yeah.
But it awkwardly had that draw, so he doesn't get a Pro Tour invite out of it, which is really sort of upsetting. But he played a pretty interesting junk list. And another one, I got to talk to Willie Idol. I was kind of afraid to talk to him because he was tweeting. If you follow him on Twitter, he was talking about all these amazing cards he was trying out. I was like, oh man, I want to see what he's doing. And Morgan's like, he's a great guy. Go talk to him. Man, he is the friendliest person I think I've ever met. And I'm like, hey, I didn't make day 2. Can I possibly see this list you're talking about? He's like, does it matter that you didn't make day 2? I'm like, oh man, like I could have just been like the guy who's like coming out to scope out what my opponent could be playing the next day. And he's like, sweet, here's my deck. And was so excited telling me about his cards. He played Desecration Demon in black-green at the top 8. He played Eradicate in the sideboard, and he said his favorite card, and he said this again in the top 8 profile,
nice.
Was Gaze of Granite.
That's amazing.
Because it is absolutely broken, he said, and he wants a second one. He said in the mirror, you can just set it up your opponent to, like, blow out their Tarmogoyfs all the time. But he said Affinity, like, if you do it for 2, it just kills everything in the Affinity deck. And my deck, the Gruul Aggro deck, he said he played that in the earlier rounds. And the guy had, like, 4-1-1s. He's like, or 4-1-drops. He's like, Infest doesn't do enough because they're all 2-3s or 3-3s. He's like, but Gaze of Granite for 1 makes them sad. So I was like, all right. Like, so you talk about this idea, and Elliot, you talked about this on the way up. What was this metagaming? And I guess, like, taking a list and changing a few cards. And here he is, takes a really good deck, and you don't have to brew a whole new format. You know what I mean? You make a few changes, and man, it's really exciting. So
yeah, it turns out you just take some standard cards and put them in there. Man, Willie Idol. Yeah, no, he had that John Dagro list that was at a, I think he was at a GP, and it was kind of breaking out. And I was like, man, I really want that list, but he did top 16, so I didn't have access to it. So I just tweeted at him. I was like, hey, can you give me this list? And he kind of just put it out there for the world to see, and it was a really great interaction. So I was like, yeah, Willie Idol's great. So yeah, that's interesting. I think Willie Idol's list is actually fairly interesting if you want to go the green-black route. Definitely give it a try. Try those Desecration Demons. I played those in my standard deck, and I really like that card. I think it puts people in awkward situations sometimes. And the Gaze of Granite, I think, sounds amazing, especially against my Black-White Tokens deck. So, yeah. Gaze of Granite for 0. Sad face.
Yeah, for 0. Oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, I think the top eight, it may not be as diverse, but I mean, there's definitely some interesting things that are there. The top 16, I think, is a little bit more diverse, and definitely take a look at all those lists. And I think Modern is really exciting and in a really good place to really invest in at this point in time, in all honesty. I think that if you haven't taken it, you just think it's too expensive or anything like that, just start small, but really consider it. It's going to be something that's going to take off, and it's going to be something that I think everyone in this car feels is going to be replacing Legacy. And right now, you're on the ground floor, and there's already staples that are rising. Verdant Catacombs, like, they are highly played. Look at this top eight. If you have not picked up Verdant Catacombs, you might already be too late. Like, they might just be the next $50 fetch land, in all honesty.
It's only another $10, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're already 40, 35 to 40. You need to get Verdants if you don't have them already.
On that topic of results changing things like prices, what do we think? Is this results going to change anything with ban lists with Modern? I mean, that happens pretty much after every big Modern event in the past couple of years.
Well, as it stands right now, I mean, the Modern, we're driving right now Sunday back down.
Yeah,
it's about 11:30 Eastern time. In a half an hour, the ban and restricted. If this tournament affected the ban and restricted announcement, then there is something wrong at R&D.
Yeah.
Because they should not be oh, well, Jun's too good. See ya, Goyf.
True. We're not going to see a change tomorrow, but pretty much directly after every event, there's been a change in Modern.
It's my hopes that they would go with unbannings. Now, JP, you're a judge and you kind of see this kind of stuff. Obviously, you're not affected with the bannings, but
I've seen this as more of a, not necessarily even from a judging perspective. I see this more as a design choice for where they want to take the game as a format. Because Modern is such a young format, I think that's why you've seen a lot of strong initial bannings and recently some unbannings with Scapeship being playable again. I think based on this event, I have not personally, because literally I walked off judging the event that I was doing, grabbed my comp, and got to the car, so I haven't had a chance to look at the top eight list. So I don't even know consistency-wise what was being played in a lot of the decks. I know, Morgan, you mentioned that green and black were very prevalent colors. To me, as I'm thinking through what's in the format, the only thing I can think that really skewed the format that direction could be the advent of Scavenging Ooze just being such a aggressive and cheap and effective card. But I don't really see Scavenging Ooze as being all that format warping, because you have other cards that do things with a similar function in the format already that aren't banned or even restricted, even though I don't think Modern's going to get anywhere near a restricted list.
Yeah.
Praise God Almighty. So really, from this event, I don't see anything getting banned necessarily, and I especially don't think, I don't even know, Mike, if you've said this as a joke or not, I don't think that they'll ban anything that they released in Modern Masters, and with them releasing both Bob and Goyf, I don't think they'll ban either of those.
No, I think my guess would be if they do anything, would be an unbanning. Maybe some of them, I don't think they'll ever unban Jace in this format.
Absolutely.
I hope they don't.
Jace is too powerful in any format he's labeled in.
But I could see maybe some of the other cards maybe coming off the list. Somebody mentioned Wild in the Coddle as something that was a possibility to come back off. I mean, hey, I doubt it, but I would see unbannings hopefully before they just start banning. Because I think Deathrite Shaman's not long enough in the format to decide that it's like that. And you know,
it's a format defining card, but it's not necessarily format warping yet.
Right. And one of our good friends, who tested a lot for this event, came up here with high expectations. It honestly did pretty well at X3.
Yeah.
He did fine. I watched him play his last round, his round where he got knocked out essentially, against hate bears, but it was like pseudo soul sisters, lots of tokens. But he was playing rest in pieces everywhere, and I watched him cast a rest in piece onto a board of Tarmogoyf, Scavenger Goose, and Deathrite Shaman. And guess what? That deck couldn't play anymore.
Yeah.
So if you want to attack these decks in the top eight, you can do it. We talked before about how the sideboard cards in Modern are so powerful. Rest in Peace is such a hoser. Just play it. Crush them. You know what I mean? And the pros play these decks because they're really consistent. And they can just, they play them better than anyone else. and they can play it consistently, but you can beat the strategy if you want to. You know what I mean? You just gotta work for it.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the top eight, there are, like, anything that's playing Deathrite Shaman, especially the, like, how does Malirapod function with Rest in Peace if they can't kill it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, if they can't kill it, like, they just can't really do anything. Like, I guess you could win with little guys, but that's it. Get that Archangel out there. Start doing work. yeah, I mean, it's kind of exciting. I mean, being, like, 26 minutes away from an announcement of any updates to the ban restricted list.
Tonight, right? Yeah, it's tonight. Yeah,
okay.
Tonight.
I'm the most underread person in this room in this car on Magic, so, like, I didn't know it was tonight. Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Like, we're super close. We get to, like, read it. We might actually add an addendum to this once it comes out, just
we're
in case.
We're so good at, like, almost hitting deadlines, like, with the lands.
Lands and the Scrylands. Oh,
like 20 minutes after we finished the podcast.
Yeah.
There was sadness in the Skype chat.
It was definitely...
It's like something died. Oh, it was. It was our mana bases.
Yeah, it's true.
Like,
they're all dead
now. I went to the bathroom, and Mike's like, yeah, they're Guildgate with Scry. And I was like, they're just Guildgates with Scry.
Why are they rare?
They're insane.
They're fine. No, they're great cards. They're not rares.
Anyway.
Yeah.
back to Modern.
I mean, that was pretty much the... when we take a look at the top 8, obviously the deck lists are available on the mothership. They'll be there for a while now, so check them out. But again, check out the top 16. And, check out some text coverage, I guess. It's the only way you get to relive it. I mean, that's pretty much everything we had in the agenda. Now, what do you guys want to tack on here?
Well, I think Mike made a really, he said this passingly, but I think it has far greater reach increase up, or like, it means more than what he said. He goes, Modern is the new Legacy. Legacy, from what we've talked about a lot this weekend, is gonna go away. And JV's kind of got that, like, I don't know face, but I can't see, I'm driving.
I don't know about that. Like, I think I'm the only one here that really plays Legacy, that loves that format. That's not going away. Legacy is Legacy. Like, you're not going to lose that core fan base. I don't know how much it's going to grow. I don't know if it can decrease. Star City makes money. They're dedicated to that format.
But you will lose people. Because, like, so Legacy right now is a set fan base. I don't know how much Legacy grows. Because if I ever wanted to play Legacy, I'm not spending a dollar on a card. Right? I'm going to borrow them from our friends. You know, we have friends that can build any Legacy that they wanted or whatever. But the money growing base for Legacy isn't going to grow. Whereas at this juncture, Modern, I got to start saying Modern, right? Modern is growing. It is a constantly growing format. Legacy is, the players that play Legacy are the players that are going to play Legacy until the format becomes extended and starts being a format. You know what I mean? Like, yes, Legacy is fun. Mike loves Legacy. I like watching Legacy. I have no idea what's going on. Like, why is that?
I love all the colors. There's a lot of colors.
Like the dredge decks, and why is that guy flip his deck over, right? That's what he was looking at the bottom of his card. But there's not going to be more Legacy players spending money. Well, Star City sales are going to go to Modern cards, especially with stuff like this. I mean, Sunday will, in some regions, is already second standard or a sealed event. Sundays being a dedicated Modern event.
I mean, let me explain when I say the new Legacy. What I mean is that, and it's already sort of happening, the format is being adopted. And people, look at all the pros. If you read any articles, all the people, when Modern first came out, this format's cool. Then the second wave of bannings came after, the first Pro Tour with it. Oh, this is awful, we can't play anything. And now all of a sudden, all these people who have hated on it, all the writers who have hated on it, are like, you know what? This format's actually kind of nice. And now we have the biggest Modern tournament ever, okay? And you could say, oh, well, that's game growth. But it isn't, because limited GPs show game growth, because anybody who with hands, and the ability to play the game can show up and do this, okay? And...
Okay, to be fair, I'm sure people without hands can still play Magic.
Okay, I'm
even
sorry.
The handless.
I am not trying to... I will donate to some charity... For people without hands, I am sorry.
I'm sorry to all our handless listeners.
I accept we'll now commit a $5 donation to people without hands.
But what
I'm handing to you.
Okay, and Standard is very similar to that as well. I mean, you could literally go buy an event deck that is a Standard deck. You can't do that for Modern. You have to actively prepare and think ahead to go play Modern. And almost, and over 1,500 people did that this weekend. Okay, these legacy tournaments for Star City, you know, if they break 200, it's a banner day for Star City. And like I said, like Jordan said, they have started changing some of their Sundays in markets that don't pull legacy players. As cards that are on the reserve list continue, people keep taking runs on them. I mean, Chains of Mephistopheles is like a $75 card now, and you wouldn't have known that card existed 6 months ago.
You don't even know what that card does still.
Oh, I'm sorry. Does that card have text? Because I honestly, it's all...
It's just a blur.
So, unfortunately...
Text. It's pleasant text, and let's move on.
Thank you, Judge JP.
So, what I'm saying is, I love that format. I would love to play Legacy all the time.
One thing I'm noticing in Modern, kind of like Legacy, and to your point, is that people have their favorite decks, and they're very deck committed now. That was not true a year ago at all with Modern. Is that there's you put your identity into a deck more, and that's extremely true in Legacy. You commit to a strategy, you commit to a deck, and I think without the bannings happening recently, people have committed to decks. I think they have to be really careful in the next couple of months to maybe not do a big ban and kill a strategy that people fall in love with, because that's just going to kill another thing.
That's very true.
I mean, that's the fear, obviously, but I mean, like, it's less of a fear in Legacy because you can invest in a deck that's been around for X amount of years and hasn't necessarily garnered enough, you know, negative attention, because I know a lot of people were predicting that Show and Tell were, we're definitely going to be banned, and it's very difficult with Modern because it is so new, and, like, they could just do that, like, they could just... You know, whip around and ban, you know, something out of the blue and just make your strategy invalid.
Right.
And so that is very risky, obviously, when you're investing in like this format. You're buying $50, $200 play sets of cards or you know, $50 cards, $125 cards, $150 cards. Tarmogoyf says hello, you know.
Yeah.
obviously, like, those are safe bets because they are. You know, format all-stars.
Man, I'm so glad Modern Master loses all those prices.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, yeah. Gosh. It's so much cheaper now. It's so much easier to address.
He even went to town.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Especially being a player that's now considering being like, maybe I need to get Tarmogoyf. And I'm like, no, I don't need to spend $600. How about that? That's a lot of... That's rent. Oh, sweet.
I mean, there's still borrow cards, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Still, like, this is a format where you're going to borrow cards, and that's part of being a competitive player. It's like, standard. Yeah. I mean, like, I own most of my standard. I don't own one on Master. Crap, I was supposed to trade that away this weekend. Dang it. Never mind.
You were selling them for $6 on site. I'm sorry, buddy.
Sorry, Eric. Your card sucks now, buddy. But, so there's still borrowable cards for this format. The fact that the price point is still manageable, buying dual lands, right? Like, a mana base for Legacy costs as much as my standard deck. You know?
It costs more than your standard deck.
By a large amount.
Yeah. Probably, like, you could probably buy my car. So, like, but I could still feasibly over time buy my fetches and not feel like I'm an idiot because I'm spending money on.
But that's the same thing with duels and Legacy. You know, it's a one piece collector item that you just build over years. So
like, if 10 years from now I can play a game of Legacy,
and that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. See, I don't think that's not true though. I don't think in 10 years you will be able to play a game of Legacy just randomly with people.
No, I don't think you will either.
And I'm sorry, JP, you keep trying to talk. I think you're. Go ahead, please.
The conversation has diverged from the point that I was going to be making earlier, which is, I'll just make it now for the sake that the conversation's over on me. When I look at Modern and I look at Legacy, they have very dedicated player bases. And Modern's is expanding because it's a more played and a more used format, but when I think about Legacy, like, I think about Ohio, I think about the Midwest area, because it's played a lot around here. When you start looking at places outside of here, like when you start looking at certain parts of the Northwest, when you start looking at certain places in Central America, you don't see Legacy played as often. Which is why, as an Ohio judge, I'm just familiar with being around and judging Legacy events, because when Star City comes in and does their Open Series, you know that there's going to be a Legacy Open on Sunday, because if you don't, your player base will have you by the neck. And with Modern, I feel like it started that way, and it's just slowly and slowly expanded. And you have your very dedicated Modern players, but you're also starting to see the pros who normally would, say, have an article once a month on a Legacy deck. Now they're doing an article once a month on a Modern deck. So you're starting to see that sort of niche aspect expand a little bit from not just being focused on Legacy, but also being focused on Modern as well.
Yeah, and I think that's just generally how it has to go. I mean, I've always predicted that eventually, you know, Legacy is just going to become new Vintage because the cards are just not going to get printed. They're not going to get the format because there's just not a functional way for the format to get supported. And that's why Modern was invented, is so they can have people that feel safe investing in cards and continuing to play the cards that they like.
Speaking of investing in cards, I mean, it is the time to invest in Modern now. I mean, especially while you have the Shocklands in Standard. Before those Shocklands start going up, because, you know, when Theros comes out, those are going to stop being printed and stuff.
Yeah,
get your Shocks while they're still affordable. Get your Fetches before they're starting to cost $100 a pop.
Yeah.
Like, get those staples that you know you're going to use in almost all of your decks, so that if you do need to transition between decks quickly, you're not scrambling for 25 or 30 pieces of a deck. Instead, you're only scrambling and trying to locate 10 or 15 pieces that you can swap in.
Now, here's a good point. You just referenced Shocks, Fetches, etc. are going to go up, you know, $100 cards. You know, all the Shocks are going to be 30, maybe. Fetches are going to be $100. Have we put ourselves in this perpetual problem of Vintage, Legacy, Extended, Modern, eventually dying as formats, because we like to do that, and maybe that's fine, right, where we, brand new formats, so everybody that's in it can get in it, and there it becomes 10 years down the line, though, what happens when Modern has the same barrier for entry? Now, granted, reprints.
That's the key.
Right,
yep,
reprints.
Yep,
you can't reprint Jason Mind Sculptor, or, you know, Volcanic Island.
Yeah. And I think it takes a
You could reprint Jason Mind Sculptor.
We just did reprint Jason Mind Sculptor.
They just did.
Yeah.
But you can't... you're correct in saying that they can't... You can't reprint a Volcanic Island. It's on the reserve list. There's no reserve list.
But
in
you
Modern.
Can reprint as many Misty Rainforests as you want. Okay,
yeah.
And that was the key. They wanted
sure
a controlled format.
You have to strategically design the... Like, Wizards has to design a format where it makes sense to have those cards back in. Like, having those cards... Like, if those were the dual lands that were available in Theros, I don't even want to think about how quick and fast this format would be.
Modern Masters 2, y'all!
I mean, that's probably
Electric Boogaloo.
Now, we put ourselves in this position with these scry gates where we could see Morgan, I think, is the one that predicted it, fetch land reprint and whatever the next block is.
Yeah, whenever the Shocklands cycle out, there'll be another set of fetch.
Which is actually, like, really good, right? Like, I'm glad, like, just even saying it out loud, I started to think about it. At this point now, Wizards has complete, almost price control, even though they don't dictate third market. They have almost complete price control over Modern barrier to entry.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I talked out loud before I thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is. It's being able to reprint, but see, they have to keep balance, specifically because they don't want to piss off investors. And people that just...
Screw investors, I want Misty Rainforest now.
Yeah, I understand that. Like, I have to see it from both sides, though, because I can imagine, like, running a shop, being like, I bought these cards at $25, you know, dollars each, whether it's real dollars or, you know, store credit, what have you. But, like, I went to the GP, I bought all these cards at $25, and then next week, they're going to be reprinted to the next set, and they immediately plummet to half their value. So now I've lost a large amount of money, in theory, that I can't make back. So now I am upset at you know, something that's going on.
Even though it's not Watsy's fault. It's
correct.
Actually,
it's honestly,
to be honest, it's Star City's fault. But I mean,
yeah,
that's...
But, like, it may not be Watsy's fault, but it's still it's something that, you know...
No, it's a real cause.
Yeah, like, that's why the reserve list is even in place, because personal investors were so upset about the depreciation of their collections.
Man, I wish Chronicles had just never existed, because ruined a lot of things for this game.
There were a lot of people that wish that didn't exist, but, I mean, that's why it's there. So, we'll definitely have to see where Modern goes. I think it has a bright future. I think that it eventually, you know, we'll see it replacing Legacy. I think that day when Star City's like, yeah, we're going to have our first Sunday Modern tournament, like, that's going to be huge.
The first Modern Open is going to be a big deal,
especially
when it replaces a Legacy tournament.
Now, I want to be fair. We, you know, Elliot kind of chimed in, you know, I don't know if this is true.
and you kind of been quiet throughout the discussion. What is your, do you have a counter, or like what, or have we swayed you, or what are you?
With Star City?
No, with Legacy Modern? Dying as a format.
I think Legacy will be propped up by Star City, and I think Star City is very invested in keeping Legacy around, and that's going to hold, but that can't hold dominating market forces. It's going to be maybe 3-5 years,
yeah,
and then I'll start agreeing with you. But I think there's going to be a still significant amount of time that Legacy is valid, relevant format, just because of the support Star City puts behind it, and they will continue supporting it. It's money for them.
Sure, as long as they continue to make money off of it. But maybe once their prices trend towards, hey, a lot of people are buying Spellskites, and ain't nobody buying Volcanic Islands.
But they do.
I think I'll say this here is, Standard opens in this region, and I'm going to use this region because JP talked about how big the Legacy community is big in our region. Okay, right. Standard opens in this region, break records every time. You're talking 700 person Standard opens in Cincinnati and Columbus. Okay, we're getting Cleveland here soon too, and they're turning around and even in this huge Legacy region, doing $150 to $200 opens for or 200 person opens. For the same prize the next day. Now, I give Star City a lot of credit for that, and they must be making a lot of money on the singles, because that is a huge difference in money. But at some point, when they see blood in the water, and they think that Modern can start hitting numbers closer to Standard, there's no way you're going to turn down another 300 people trying to give you $40 a pop in the name of selling more expensive singles. You can't do it. So I think. You may be right about the time. I don't think it'll personally be that long, honestly. But at some point, that shift is going to happen.
I think that that we can agree that we're still at the ground level. I think Modern still has room to grow price wise. If you have money, I would honestly say invest and best suit. If you're going to thank yourself later for it.
If you have money, I like it.
If you have the money to.
If you have money and you've already eaten. Go. I mean, I will say this about Modern. We all did terrible, and I'm pretty sure we all agreed we want to play it again.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get better at it, because I don't want to go to another Modern tournament and suck at it. So I want to get better at it. I want to find a deck that fits me, that fits my playstyle, which is not something that I think I had, Saturday. So that's more exploration of me and my playstyle.
It's actually really funny. We sucked, but we loved it. I got beat in this round, and I got blew out. I wasn't happy. I threw all my stuff in my bag. And I wasn't mean. I was kind of an okay spirit because I was having fun. But I was kind of mad at myself when I didn't play this thing. I think stood up, kind of half threw my chair into the table, while pushing it in. And Dan Musser walks by and goes, "Taking it didn't win that one." It's just no, but I had a lot of fun. I was nice, but and I'm bummed I lost, but I had fun. And I missed out on 24 Planeswalker points, but it was a good time. And that's kind of how I felt about the format. I wanted to throw my deck against the wall half the day, four times. But it was a good time. I'm playing this Wednesday, I think. That's probably not true. I got to do something. But I want to play this Wednesday, I think. I don't know.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But, I think all in all, to just kind of recap everything and kind of reflect on the weekend, I think we all can agree that if you've never gone to a GP and you just want to have a good time and you have the $40 to really go and kind of have that experience, definitely plan it, make a trip. It's something to behold, to be in a room filled with, over 1,000 people that all want to do the same thing that you want to do. I think it's definitely something to try, to have that experience. Check your Planeswalkers points. Try to make it something. Try to make it a goal. Try to make it to that buy, and have that, have pride that you're not having to sit down round one and battle it out through 9 rounds. Even if it's just 8, that's fine. You have that buy. You have that success. And even if it's the only win that you get, it's still all right. I know how that feels. It's still all right.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just wrapping up.
One thing we always do that we did this time, the venue for being Detroit was really nice. The Cobo Center was very, very nice. All you can drink pop for $3.
Oh yeah.
They said they got screwed on me, man.
Like, every round I would fill up, my cup got weak and flimsy by the end of the day. But, like, it was my cup. And the food staff there was very polite. They were very nice. They made us walk up steps to use the bathroom. They knew we needed our cardiovascular health.
This is a guy who almost had a heart attack on the toilet tonight.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the venue. We talk about venues a lot, critique them or whatever, but Cobo Center was very nice.
Yeah, definitely.
I had plenty of space.
It was a nice $3 infinite soda that they gave you guys.
And they said, don't bring the cup back tomorrow because it won't count. Guess what? Brought the cup back. Take that, Cobo Center.
Oh, no.
Got you for $3.
They're gonna send you a bill.
Oh, is that a cop?
Shut up, because we're driving. I was like, I just got a speeding ticket last week. I don't need another one.
Oh, man.
You guys should see the look on my face. It's
pretty priceless.
Oh,
all right. So I think that's a good place to end our two-parter, the beginning and the end of our GP Detroit. I would like to thank Elliot and JP for being on. Anytime that you guys want to come back on, you guys can Skype in, and we'll definitely chat with you. So thank you guys again. Mike and Jordan, I don't think I ever thank you guys for being on, but hey, thanks for being on the podcast and putting up with my shit.
You're welcome, because it's not an easy decision.
No, it's not.
I could do a billion better things on my Tuesday.
No, I agree. No, fair enough. You're not wrong. But and thank everyone for continuing to listen.